Ladies and gentlemen, we're ready to start with the question period. There's a microphone up here. Please come forward, state your name, and ask your question. You've gotten plenty of information. I'm sure there are some questions you want to ask Bob that he can respond to. So please feel free to come up and continue eating. This is just like at home when you're trying to talk to your kids. Some of them won't listen anyway while they're eating. Bob.
Thank you very much for your very interesting presentation. My name is Bobby Pendergast, and I was just wondering on that MSIC grant, is it a use it or lose it kind of a grant? And if there's a surplus, there'll be less money in future years.
Do you mean the Municipal Sustainability Initiative?
Yes.
The MSI?
Yeah, MSI. Yes.
Well, technically, I suppose, there is a requirement in the program that if it isn't used over a period of time, that it would be returned to the province. But it has to be demanded by the province. Now, I'm going to tell you an interesting story. Under the Alberta Municipal Infrastructure Program, which is the $14 million a year now, it has to be all used by 1914. However, a good portion of that is probably sitting in the ABCP investment, which is not going to mature at the very best until 2016. So I don't know how the province is going to get back their money if it's still sitting in some broker's account until 2016. But I think it's a technicality. I don't think they'll demand it back, or at least that's the experience. I mean, if the province didn't go after very hard, the fellow that got the $1.2 million to build the rebuild the atrium, then it's not likely they're going to go after the city on money that they need.
If you have a question, please come up here and so we can keep the questions coming. Anybody else with a question? No questions with all that money being spent?
Oh, good.
I'm asking people here, we need you on the thing.
Bob, my name is Peter Green. I was speaking to you very briefly at the table there, and I didn't quite finish, but the question is there not some mechanism whereby one could demand a response from council, you know, or get some sort of audit that would clarify the situation? At the moment, it seems to me that it's neither healthy for the citizens and taxpayers of this province or the administration, because either way, there's a lot of uncertainty about this whole thing. Now, maybe if an individual can't get answers by asking the question, could a group, by way of a petition or something, get things going?
Well, I don't think you can make the politician answer the question. Hopefully, in a democratic society, they would answer questions. I think that they will respond if enough people were to call them. They all have websites. They all have telephone numbers. And if people are to call, I guess the problem with that is, in my mind, a lot of people don't know what question to ask, you know, other than say, I'm paying too much. Well, you know, most aldermen are going to say, well, everybody pays, and we need it. I like to think that years ago in Lethbridge, there was the Civic Government Association that was fairly active, and as a group of people that would organize and try to get a message across to aldermen, I think that worked for several years, but it hasn't been around for several years. And maybe that's the kind of thing that has to be started. We have to get less comfortable and recognize that most of us are not increasing our incomes at the rate that the city's increasing the take.
I think all of us were staggered at $150 million, and yet the first question that most people thought of was, why don't we have a pension plan for the mayor? In any here, you said...
To start now.
The $150 million, Bob, in your research, I saw the first letter showed that what they've done with it, so much in long-term and short-term and whatnot. But in your research, did you get any documentation as to where it came from and what restrictions were on its use?
Well, David, I can tell you that a good portion of it, of that $150 million, is AMIP money. That's the Alberta Municipal Infrastructure Program. And they've been getting $14 million a year and haven't spent very much. Out of the first $42 million, there was $34 million still in, and that's part of that investment. The reason that I say that it's about 25% is in the income, the investment income that the city earned last year, $4.8 million, only 3.6 of it went into the MRSR. And David, you would know that that's as a result of the other interest that was earned has to stay in the account that's attached to the restricted Alberta grants. So I'm assuming that of that $150 million, there's something in the order of $40 million is under restricted funds. The rest of it is tax money that's grown up over the years and the interest payments that we've made. And about, you know, about $40 million would be restricted grants that have to go for core infrastructure.
So $40 to $50 million is restricted by the province. There would also be that $35 million or so from various reserves. Would we include it in there?
Well, yes, that would be in the reserves. That's restricted only by decisions that council may make. They can move that anytime they want. And in fact, as you well know, they do move it from time to time from one reserve to another.
And the balance then, you figure, would be money that was collected. I know the TIP program, mine starts in September of, say, 2007, to pay for expenses in 2008. Would that be... And it's all collected by June of the current year.
Of the $150 million that was in place at the end of December, a lot of that would be cashed in. The short-term investments would be cashed in as time went by to cover the expenses until June. But, David, there's another factor, and that is something in the order of $3 or $4 million comes every month from the electric utility. About just under $1 million a year comes from the gas utility. Those of you that get ATCO Gas realize that there's an access fee. That all goes to the city. So it lives for a long time out of the year, not necessarily on those investments, but from the utility money coming in.
Any other questions? No one else? One question I have then while someone's coming up, Bob, in most places I've been, and include Calgary, Edmonton, Red Deer, other places, the newspaper generally assigns one or more reporters to report on information from city council. This city seems to have a silent newspaper that's as silent as city council, except for your letters and Bob Parkin's. Would you comment?
Well, there's more than Bob Parkin and I that write. There's Mike Williams, Martin Boat. Their names come to mind right away. But what can I say? When I talk about the Lethbridge Herald, sometimes I say, check where the head office is, and it's in Medicine Hat, and maybe they pay more attention to matters in Medicine Hat than they do in Lethbridge. But they try. I don't think they have the time or the interest to do investigative journalism, and I think that's what we need. I mean, in this kind of society, we need help from the media to protect us.
Dwayne Pendergast, Bob. We hear a lot about transparency in government, yet you seem to have had difficulty finding out what that $148 million is invested in. Wouldn't it be reasonable to expect that you could find a list on the city website?
Well, it would be reasonable to expect that, Dwayne, but I don't think we're going to find it. They talk about open and transparency, and there's one story that I just have to tell you quickly. In January, again, the new council passed a motion saying that they were going to be even more open and transparent than they'd ever been before. And one of the aldermen, who happens to be the head of the audit committee on council, made a statement quoted in the Lethbridge Herald that said, "I don't see how we could be more open and transparent." Well, 5 months later, we heard that, in fact, 6 months before he made that statement, they had a $30 million loss, or at least a freezing of $30 million that all council knew about, they were all working on, and nobody wanted to tell us anything. I'm not their son. I'm entitled to have explanations from city council. And when they take that view that they're going to keep private whatever they want to keep private, I think that's a problem.
Mr. Bronski, I'd like to commend you for spending time to analyze what you have done. My name is Bal Bura, a citizen of Lethbridge, a concerned citizen. Most people lose financial statements from credit to debit, and that's the end of it once they go through that. But what you have done is tremendous. The analysis takes time. Now, there's a lot of questions, but I will ask you one question.
Just move back into the mic.
All right. So if I would say that the city is doing what they're doing, and the services they are providing us today, in your humble opinion, is it possible to do it for less? Thank you.
In my opinion, they can do it on far less, because a lot of it, just for instance, the interest that's collected on the MRSR, which is on our money, borrowed from us, we're paying interest back, there's no need to pay that interest because all it's doing is increasing the pot of the 150. If City Council was to ever sit down and say, this is what we're going to do with that interest, then we might be amenable to paying the interest. So I think $4 million a year in interest right now can be taken out of that. They also, rather than saving every year the fines, I have a ghost car that sits in front of my house, what is it, Bonnie, 3 times a week, and they're snapping pictures all the time. I mean, they are making a fortune off that, and you can see from the reports that we're getting $3.5-4 million every year from the fines. If they would use that to meet some of the expenses instead of saving it so that they can loan it out again and so that we can pay it back with interest, I mean, it's just building dramatically for no apparent reason. So I think it could be really reduced a lot.
Do you think that some political, your name, Philip Jorgensen, do you think some kind of political reform is needed? Do you think if there was a ward system, isn't there a restriction to this 3-year plan and seems to lock in, there's going to automatically be these increases no matter what happens in the world? The other thing I think that keeps us from getting information and opposition where it belongs from aldermen is every year they go for a long retreat and they come back and they say, we're a team. What's the score between this team and team taxpayers? About 11-11 to zip. And it's no longer moral to question this 3-year plan and all the things that have been agreed on. Do you think political reform would help the ward system?
Well, I know that I have some friends that think the ward system would help because it might then pit one alderman against another if he's representing part of the city against another. And that seems to work well in Calgary because it gets some serious debate going. I think it might work here. I think you have to have some independent thinkers, and we don't seem to attract that. The last independent thinker that I can think of was Joe Morrow, and he would ask a lot of questions. Nobody now asks questions. If you go through the minutes, 97% of the motions are passed unanimously, and you have no idea what anybody might be thinking. We know that they make the decision in the back room and then come forward and cast their votes. I don't know how we can encourage them to debate openly on each issue, because they can't possibly all be agreeing on the same thing all the time. I had mentioned to Ed Bardock that I picked up a copy of the college's newspaper the other day, and to me it was shocking on the front page, although I can't attract too much attention to it. But I think it tells you some of the attitude that there might be within City Hall. They feel very comfortable within City Hall. And it talks about, have you heard about this living home on the west side that's being built? The city donated about $120,000 lot and $500,000 cash to get it built. And at some stage, they may get that back. Falling home prices may not get there. But the college described how this all occurred. And it was, the city came to us. Well, I know this is an individual working in the residential subdivisions. The city came to us. They had some money. And they have a subdivision called Sunridge. And they thought it would be a great idea to build a home with their money. I mean, that is not something that citizens participate in. It's one individual working the subdivision program there. And by the way, it's in the hole now, $9 million. And they have a line of credit from our MRSR of $22 million. The residential subdivision is not making money.
Go ahead. Hi, Bob. My name is Ken Eichel. You didn't mention the $5 million that they supposedly donated to the university that we're paying the payments on and interest on it, too. But I would like to ask you a question, and with the MSR, the land development, City of Lethbridge Land Development Company, started off with taxpayers' money and takes a profit off of all the sales of lots on their development. And I would like to know if you found out basically how much overall they've collected over all of the developments, and where that money is going to, if it's going back into the MSR. I know they've invested $25 million in crossings, and how much of that was basically profits off of the lots. So you figure they're selling the lots for $100,000 now, and they started out at $35,000 in Riverstone. But they've collected a lot of money. But where is the money? Because when you ask where all that money is, you can't see it on any financial statement, how much profits they've made.
Well, Ken, they do report income from the residential subdivision surplus. Of course, the surplus has never been a surplus. It's a debt. So they show the sales, or they show the receipts, but frankly, it is not a profit. They continue to lose money in their subdivision program. Now, whether they will eventually make money, I don't know. The city charges them 2% on that money, and it's soon going to be as much as $22 million drawn out of the MRSR. They entered into a partnership, and I have to mention this quickly, with Daytona Homes on the west side doing Copperwood. The idea when it was presented to council and they accepted it was that the profits from that business in Copperwood was going to pay for the $22 million in the construction of the crossings, which is that property they're developing in front of the high schools. To date, 3 years later, there has not been 10 cents earned on that Copperwood transaction. I know that the first 12% of all sales go directly to Daytona and they don't come to the city. I don't know whether they're going to make any money on that, but they were supposed to make something over $20 million. You can't see it.
My name is James Moore. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you coming here with this analysis. I have a question about the ABCP. $30 million locked away. The banks have no liability. First order of business from Purdy Crawford. How is it possible? I mean, where's the accountability? Who decided to invest that? Are there guidelines on what the city can do with this money? Are they looking after the best interests of the people and the types of investment? Who sold it to them? What were the commissions? And who is responsible? And is there any accountability for this kind of behavior with our money? But I also would like you, if you can, to make some positive suggestions. You've done a lot of really good work here, and you know, it's good. it's good that you bring this to our attention, but would you please give us a couple of positive, forward-looking things, how you'd like to see the city finances operating? Thank you.
Well, I suppose, although when my friend David Carpenter was mayor, there were lots of times that I disagreed with him, but I think we have to do our very best to encourage people with some financial ability, and David, of course, was an accountant, to be on city council so that there's some check and balance on what administration wants. Because an administration is never going to be particularly interested in protecting the taxpayer. That's the job of city council. And if you look at the people, there's not a lot of people there with any financial background or understanding, and there's no businessmen. So I would encourage businessmen or people with a financial background to be on council, and that would be the first step. I noticed that the provincial politicians are here asking questions, James and Val, but I wish some of the city ones were. You mentioned the ABCP. How did it get there? They have a policy that they simply will buy whatever the broker that they have brings to them, as long as it has a DBRS rating of R1. And unfortunately, nobody in City Hall, at least that I'm aware of, would remotely examine what the broker brought to them. Now, they won't tell us who that broker was. I have a pretty good idea that it's National Bank. They've had virtually all of the business of the city of Lethbridge. That $150 million is, my understanding, is all invested through them. But the city won't tell us who they use as the investment banker. The commissions payable would depend on what happened there, but I have some knowledge of the investment programs, and I can tell you that what National Bank would have done when there was a lot of sales wanting to be made of this ABCP paper, they would have bumped the amount of the payment to each of their brokers that were going out and selling it. For example, the Alberta Treasury Branch recognized 5 months before this thing fell apart that this was bad stuff. This is right out of the Calgary Herald, an interview with the head of ATB. They unloaded $300 million worth of this paper in the 4 months preceding the crash in August. The CASE, that is the major pension fund for all of the pensions in Quebec, apparently unloaded about $9 billion before they brought a halt to it. I don't think this story is at an end. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court of Canada said nobody that's been diddled here is going to have the right to sue unless they can prove absolute fraud. I think we've all been taken a long way on this ABCP property.
One final question, Gordon.
Gordon Campbell, not a question, but a comment. First of all, to observe that this is a gathering of volunteers, of citizens organized by volunteers, and with yourself as a speaker who consistently contributes to the very essence of a political democracy, people making observations about how the process works and to ask for greater accountability. So we thank you for coming. We also want to observe, however, that there is a city council who are elected to listen to citizens. It is true that if they came to this public meeting and apparently isn't one city councilor here, I think that's a shame. But there isn't. And it seems to me that if there were, they might have felt obliged to speak. No one is obliged to speak. But in my humble opinion, they are obliged to listen. And to listen, they should come to gatherings of citizens like this. Finally, I want to say a sadness that I feel that Channel 12 has decided not to continue to televise these programs so that people in hospitals and elsewhere in the city and in the rural areas can listen to this debate and enhance the quality of information base for our democracy to work well, not only for the city, but for the province. Thank you again.
Thank you, Gordon. Thank you all.
Robert, on behalf of not only the people here today, but on behalf of the citizens of Lethbridge, I want to echo Gordon's comment that you and your colleagues are providing a valuable service, that you have the insight and the information and the background to produce information that is correct and is not being challenged by either the administration or city council. So on behalf of everyone, we thank you. The one thing I can't understand is how you could lose a case in Lethbridge and consistently win in the Supreme Court. I come to the conclusion that when you appeared before the Supreme Court, you were like you were today, all ready to go, and they bowed to your expertise. Anyway, next week, Dr. Lazell of the University of Calgary will be speaking on biofuels. And I regret that we didn't have Robert Parkin here today. We were going to, but as you can see from the information we have been given today, that it was impossible to work two together. We expect to have another session at the library, which, as Trevor mentioned, will be an hour to 2 hours long, and we'll look at examining this. And I think there'll be some questions after the city presents their budget, and I hope all of you who have had this information we'll be asking some questions of our city council and mayor. Thank you once again.